This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Swings here and he drives one deep into center. Puig is racing back, still going back. He looks up. It's gone! Over the center field wall for Hunter Pence. Pence will touch them all and score them all. A grand slam for Hunter Pence.
It's not easy when it's tough. That's when you find out what you're made of.
You get so much Brisby in your ears if you want it. If you want Brisby, oh gosh, you get it.
Anybody want coffee? I'm making coffee. Anybody want?
Yes! Yes! Yes!
I'm a frequent coffee drinker. I'm part of the club. I have a card.
You're listening to The Baseball Barista with Hunter Pence and Grant Brisby on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 2 of The Baseball Barista. I am Grant Brisby. I am here with Hunter Pence. How are you doing, Hunter?
I'm doing great, Grant. I'm getting very caffeinated right now. It was a wonderful week 1 of the baseball season and lots of fun stuff to talk about. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's the last time we talked, there was that anticipation. You're wondering what's going to happen. And well, now we know. We have a few games in the books, and it's been fun. Baseball's back. How can you go wrong with that? So what have you picked up on? What games were you watching? What games were you nerding out over? Like, is there something that caught your eye?
There's a lot of things that caught my eye. Obviously, scrolling over a lot of the games and like looking at some of our predictions. Two big surprises for me, the two biggest surprises. One is the A's, who had a tremendous spring training. They are now 0-5, and I'm sure when this airs, we'll see where they are. But I did not expect the A's to be 0-5. And I know they played the Astros, and the Astros had a terrible spring training. They were the worst record. So I don't know if this means that spring training doesn't matter, but I think it does say something about veteran teams versus young teams and whatnot. And it's still a long way to go. But do you think the A's are that bad?
I don't think anybody's that bad because they haven't just lost their first 5 games. They've been outscored by 12-45. That's not sustainable. I mean, they've lost 8-1, 9-1, 9-2, 10-3. That's brutal. I don't think anyone is that bad. I don't think, you know, the 63 Mets were that bad. This is just an all-time whoopsie doodle to start the year.
Yeah, and I mean, these things happen. Like, April can be fooling. It can fool you, you know, and I mean, it's a terrible pun, but April can fool you big time. And there's sometimes teams will like take off and be like, oh, they're great. And then just everything, like the teams will kind of settle in. That was one of the big surprises. Do you think you can name the other one? I doubt you can know the other one that really shocked me that I'm pretty excited about, actually.
The other surprise, the Phillies, and it's so far through their first 4 games, their bullpen has allowed 1 run. And boy, that wasn't the case last year. So I will guess Phillies, but is that the one you're thinking of?
You hit the nail on that. I definitely didn't think you were going to guess it, but the Phillies pumping the Braves. And then with the whole weird shenanigans, COVID times, the Mets bring DeGrom, and game one, they DeGrom doesn't give up a run, and they score 5 in the 8th. The Phillies are really exciting. Like, there's another smaller surprise, but I mean, yeah, it's the A's and the Phillies. Those were the 2. That was great. That was a great call. And if your bullpen's doing that, look out, because the Phillies got a lineup, man. That's exciting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the Phillies are just one of those sneaky, interesting teams where you kind of read too much into last season, and we should never read too much into 2020 in several different respects. But last year, they had a very clear, identifiable problem. And this year, okay, you know, what did they really do to fix it? Not as much as maybe, you know, the Archie Bradley's in there. They have Sam Coonrod. Like, they have some new relievers. At the same time, it's not like they went out and signed vintage Craig Kimbrell or Billy Wagner. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't just go out and hit the problem over the head with a sledgehammer. They sort of said, well, we weren't as bad as we were last year. We should be better. And they sort of trusted in that foundation a little bit. And so far, so good. I mean, 5 games is 5 games. But if they have a functional bullpen, like, they can probably score some runs. They could probably prevent them with the rotation. It's an interesting team. An interesting team in an interesting division.
Yeah, and I mean, also, like, the starting pitching has been pretty good. And I think Zach Wheeler, when they signed him last year, like, this is a dude. This is a guy. He came out and that first start really looked true to form. And I mean, last year was a weird year. Like, it's hard to really gauge. Like, there was like a lot of protocols and a lot of like people not really following. And so it was like not necessarily didn't. I just didn't feel as like super fair for like. Like, it's just a weird year. So, like, anyway, I'm excited about the Phillies, and I was excited about them last year, and I didn't, you know, obviously not getting to see, like, the East being in the West. So, that's really interesting, because the NL East, as I said before, is one of my, I think it's, like, just such a close race, and all of these teams could be great, and, like, the Mets are supposed to be good, the Nationals, you know, are supposed to be good, all of them. There's not a single team. The Marlins are actually somewhat surprising. They're off to a bit of a slow start, so maybe last year was a fluke, maybe they're not quite ready yet. Who knows? But anyway, the Phillies are exciting to watch, and that was quite a thing. Now, Grant, I want to talk about a couple of the big performances that are, like, first week, like, hello, baseball, I'm here. Shohei Ohtani.
Yes.
throwing it 101, hitting it 115. Like, I mean, all of baseball, everyone in my Twitch chat, everyone's like hitting me up. Did you see Ohtani? Did you see Ohtani? This is Babe Ruth happening right now.
It is wild, because I don't know how you could really sleep on Ohtani, but somehow he, you know, the last couple of years with injuries, and there is a little bit of inconsistency, and then there was even discussion, well, is he a pitcher or a hitter? Do they have to choose? They have to choose. And so he got lulled to sleep a little bit. This is his fourth season, which is hard to believe. At the same time, when you see it work, holy shnikes, like, it works, like, 101, and it's not like the home run was a wall scraper either. That was crushed, and you forget just how gigantic of a human being he is. You know, you see him hit a home run like that, and you're like, he's basically like Aaron Judge size, and you forget that. The guy is huge, and he's doing everything on a baseball field well. He's running well.
He is a specimen. He is definitely like something that you need to go watch and see. But the fact that like watching him offensively, yeah, he has that crazy power, but he's fast as lightning too, by the way. Like this huge, like 6'7", it feels like he's like 6'7", still moving athletically. He gets down the line. So he is a tough out, and he can like, his arms are so long, he can cover pitches like a mile off the plate, and he can get to the inside pitch and turn. He's the complete package. And like the fact that I thought for sure the Angels were going to be like, just hit, like you're going to change the game as just a hitter, whatever, you know. But they're starting him and batting him in the two hole, and right. He's just launching. Like, this is sweet. Like, these are stories that, like, you got to see. Like, let's see, can he do this for 162? Is the six-man rotation going to be a thing? All I know is he's punching tickets, hitting homers, digging down the line, and, like, I hope, please stay healthy for 162, because that is legendary.
I love that he has a stolen base. Like, you know, like you're saying, just as lightning fast, but he uses it. And he's a solid base runner. You know, it's one thing to be fast, but he's also good at running the bases. Now, can you wrap your head around what it takes to be technically adept at pitching while also needing to be technically adept at things like base running and knowing your the opposing pitchers and stuff like that? Like, how do you have that sort of polymath thing going on where you can handle all those jobs?
Like, obviously hitting and stuff, like there's certain times when you can just like, you can just be, see it and hit it. Like, that's kind of how I did most of my hitting for, I was like, I'm just going to practice and I'm going to see it and hit it. I'm not like super technical with everything. As I got older, I had to get like extremely technical. So I definitely think that that's possible. But like, even like pitching, I guess maybe sometimes if you overthink it, you get in the way. Like, just, I think location and mastering your location and the body control is one of the, like, that's the thing about pitching. And pitching is what wins championships. And so having him as a pitcher is going to take you to that next echelon. Because, yeah, having this, like, huge, you know, OPS, like, crazy awesome hitter does help you win. But, like, a pitcher that can throw 101 with a nasty split and like, hit spots, like, that's what's going to take you to the elite level. So if he can start really getting location and getting that down, like, that to me is, like, the ultimate challenge. I feel like he's put his time in with hitting. So that's going to be the fun thing to watch over time is, can he get deep into games as a starting pitcher? Does it make all the other pitchers better with the six-man rotation? There's so many questions, and, like, it's such a storyline. So I'm looking forward to following that for sure. And also not only, like, what Ohtani has done, but I'm high on the White Sox. And the Angels, they are pumping right now. Like, they won that series, and they played some dogfight games, and they showed fire and spark. And this is, You know, it's Trout, it's Rendon, it's Pujols, it's big boys. They're coming with it. And then they won the first game of their next series. So talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing from these Angels. They actually took down the Astros, who were undefeated, in a pretty nasty game. They were down late.
The Angels have always fascinated me because they start with the greatest head start in, you know, the past 50 years, basically. When you're talking, you've got Mike Trout, that's your head start. You've already built a better 26-man roster through round one of the you know, metaphorical draft than most every team. But they haven't been able to surround it with pitching. You know, pitching has been the problem. It's been, you know, 1 year it's the bullpen. The starting pitching was actually kind of okay last year for them in some respects, but the bullpen was iffy. And it's just always been one piece, two piece. You look at the roster and it's like, you got Trout, you've got Rendon, now you've got Ohtani looking like full strength. And they were always just one piece, you know, and now it looks like they might have figured something out. You got David Fletcher, that's another piece, but the rotation, if you get Dylan Bundy back to what he can be, if you got Quintana, if he can contribute at all, and then if you have Ohtani pumping 101-mile-per-hour fastballs, I would buy into the Angels. I mean, they start with Trout.
I saw some quotes, and like, this is what I see that I like even more about the Angels. And yeah, you have to have the whole package. You have to have the pitchers. You have to have the bullpen, and I believe in that. But the biggest key that you have to have is fire and passion. I felt like in some of the interviews you see in Trout's voice, like, yeah, I know, I hear it. I haven't, you know, been to the playoffs in a while. I haven't done anything in the playoffs. And like, you see him with like these clutch hits and going off to the dugout with like, let's go. You know, like, there's a spirit to like finally getting it done. And a lot of times it's your failure and it's like hearing that question and feeling that hurt and that pain that just wakes you up where you're like, I'm not putting up with this anymore. We're not putting up with this anymore. And when your leader, when the best player on the team, like you said, the head start is getting big hits and showing emotion, it wakes everyone up. You're like, Trout's getting into it. I'm getting to it. We're going to do this. We're going to pick him up. We're not going to say it's not the pitching. It's this, it's that. We're going to just do it. It's my turn. Let's do it. And I felt that from him. Like, I got inspired watching him. And that gets me excited.
That's fascinating to me, because if there's someone who might know a little bit about pumping up the dugout, it might be you. So I want to flip that back around and ask you, I'm assuming that you didn't just show up on the Astros your rookie year fully formed as a clubhouse inspiration. You probably were a rookie. You probably had to carry, you know, the My Little Pony backpack filled with candy and stuff like that. But at some point, you realized, I can contribute by getting this fire outside of my belly and into the open air where it can, you know, infect the ears of everyone else. So at what point in your career did you say, you know what, screw it, I'm going for it. I'm going to pump these guys up.
Well, honestly, like, actions speak louder than words, and timing, like, you can't lead if you're not like leading with your example, leading with your play on the field. Like, I know there is respect and all of that, and like, for what you've done in the past, but like, if you're just living on what you've done in the past, it's not going to matter. It's what you're doing now. So you have to be getting it done, and you have to be like going all in, and that's when you can inspire someone. And it was like obviously I, like, after like the whole 2012 thing, and I spoke, the reason that I spoke was so powerful is because I was so quiet for so long. Like, you can't just keep speaking, you have to be doing, and it's a balance of all of that. And I, you know, so at the end of the day, like, there is inspiring, but it has to come from the Mike Trout that's getting it done, that's coming with it in a big moment, and then you all catapult off of that. And you just have to, like, that's sort of the thing. You have to have this perfect storm to make it happen. And it can't be fake. It can't be phony. And it has to be the right time, the right person, and not too much.
So there's a couple different ways to approach it, you might say, where one is the archetype in Giants lore is Will Clark. Will Clark shows up. He's a rookie. And he's just like,
hey, what's happening?
You're overmodulating.
It's just outsized personality. You're not going to contain it. But then there's that other side where you have someone like Mike Trout, who is just, you know, a professional, and he's, you know, very even keeled. But at some point, does the fire coming from him, is that what you're saying? Like, all of a sudden Hunter Pence is speaking out, and everyone's like, whoa, okay. Like, now, you know, he's been putting in the work and now he's fed up. And so that's what you're saying?
That's what I see from Mike Trout, because Mike Trout is so professional and so calm and cool. And so I, you know, this is what I expect to do. This is what I do. at some point you just have to lose your mind. And like, that's when like that perfect storm, like you watch some of the teams that are like in that frequency, in that like crazed, like psycho, like you saw it in the Red Sox when they had that Boston Strong. It was like, these dudes were just like, enough is enough. Like they were like, we're defending the Boston Strong. Like you feel that inspired. You saw it in the Nationals. They had had all these years and then they lost Harper and no one believed in them. And they came back and they were just, you run into that freaking, that steamroller, it's coming. You know, they took down the Dodgers that year were like, no one thought the Dodgers were losing. And you just, when you get caught with that wave of like, enough is enough, and you've just lost your mind for a cause greater than yourself, like Trout's like, it's time. And like, he's earned the respect and he's done all this, but he's showing some emotion and it leaks into everyone because there's a spirit that's bigger than just going through the motions, just playing for money, just playing for fame, playing for whatever. There's a spirit to like, I don't care what anyone thinks anymore. I'm freaking coming. And like, I feel a little bit of that. And I know it's early and I haven't even gotten to some of my other stuff, but I just wanted to hit on the Angels showing me some fire and Mike Trout showing me some fire. Even the pitching gets better when you see him do that because they're uplifted.
I see that in the Dodgers last year. And, you know, in my previous life as a blogger, what, you know, I was covering the Giants from a fan perspective. And every time the Dodgers were eliminated, I would write like a jokey article like Dodgers failed to win World Series for 35th, you know, consecutive year. I would include a jokey image like, you know, the last time the Dodgers won the World Series, here's what video games look like. It'd be like Madden and they'd be like, you know, pixelated things from 1988. At some point, I figured out they're not just going to lose every year. At some point, they're going to snap. At some point, they're going to break through all those barriers. They were just too good. And at one point, they were just going to freak out on the rest of baseball. It happened in a weird season, but I think it was coming anyway. I mean, they at no point in that season were you thinking, well, gosh, I wonder what's happening with the Dodgers. You knew what was happening with the Dodgers. They were gonna crush you. And I think that it built up.
They had the perfect storm, and they had built that pain. Like, they felt robbed of 2017 when you find out that potentially the team you were playing against was stealing your signs. They were like, what? Like, they thought that they just got beaten. And they're like, wait, we got robbed of that. Like, we're not going to get robbed again. Like, and they brought over Mookie Betts, this crazy leader. And once again, another guy who does everything right, who's the best in the world and is losing his mind on the field and making defensive plays to change games. Like, they don't beat the Braves without those crazy defensive plays that Mookie Betts. He robbed like two homers or two nasty doubles. And by the way, if they're playing in Atlanta versus Texas, those are definitely home runs that you can't rob. But that new Texas stadium is huge. So like, it was a perfect storm. And you heard it in Dave Roberts' voice. You get bold enough, you get feel enough pain. He's like, this is our year. Before they even go to the World Series, we will not be stopped. This is our year. Like, that's a bold statement. Like, Hudson, when we went to play the Nationals in 2014, the team that was won 100 and whatever games, he says, you know, they're a great team and they're more talented than us, but it's what's between your legs? He called them out. And I was like, I don't think we should have said that. But you know what? It made them want to do it too much. It like actually pissed them off. But there's a spirit where you just like, you felt it and you saw it in Mookie and you saw it in Dave Roberts' speech right there. And that's why it's so hard to go back-to-back World Series. It's like, it takes a crazy fire, it's soul power. It's this deep soul power. And it takes, sometimes it's the huge pain and the failures that fuel that fire.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Do you ever wish you could have something both ways? A zero-calorie cheeseburger, red wine with no headache, new baseball uniforms that aren't see-through. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but you can have both with Mack Weldon's timeless apparel with performance fabrics. I just got Mack Weldon's silver crew neck tee in a couple of different colors in the Silver Peak Polo. They're awesome. They look fantastic, but more importantly, they're the most comfortable shirts I've ever worn, and that's important. They're nice enough that I wear them to work, but so comfortable that they're a go-to on the weekends too. It's not flashy, just classic, always in style clothing made with performance materials, but those materials don't give their clothing that techie, shiny look that you see a lot of the time. They also have shorts, sweats, and warmer weather fleeces and button-up shirts, all the things you need any season of the year. Don't take my word for it, though. Try it yourself. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com and the promo code MLB Show.
Yeah, no, you brought up a good point with the Dodgers, where it's that 2017 World Series. I remember I was at Game 5, I was covering Game 5, and that was the wackiest baseball game I've ever seen. That's the one where it just went, you know, the Dodgers had the lead, the Astros have the lead, and when I left, it was, you know, baseball was broken in my brain. I couldn't process it. I was on like this endorphin high. Then you think back, well, it's almost as if one team knew what was coming, and maybe you're thinking, oh, okay. And that as fuel is coming into the 2020 postseason. And, you know, people say the Dodgers won it in a freaky weird season. It doesn't, you know, it's 60 game season. It doesn't count. No, forget that. They had an additional round, basically. They had to go up against a wild card team and beat them 2 out of 3. And you know that baseball is weird. I mean, baseball's not so weird that you're going to beat the Dodgers in a 162 game season. In a 3-game series, I don't know. You know, maybe that's baseball. So I think they did even more than the typical World Series team.
Who's to say? 2020, they won it all. Like, I'm not going to, like, discredit what they did, and I'm not going to credit, like, the bad things that happened. Because, like 2020 is like, if you won, celebrate it. If you didn't win, like, let's just continue on, because that was a crazy year. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was just one of those years. But it wasn't like teams weren't all in to win the whole thing. So, like, they earned it for sure. But, oh, yeah, that game, the Astros and the Dodgers, there were some crazy stats with, like, Yu Darvish and, like, his slider. They didn't swing it. Like, he, like, threw, like, maybe, like, I don't remember the exact numbers, but they didn't swing at a single one of them. And he had, like, this crazy chase rate. And the bullpen of the Dodgers in 2017, I just remember that bullpen, no one was touching them. And the Astros just dismantled this bullpen that, like, was one of the most insane bullpens I've ever seen. So that was pretty wild. But someone look at, like, Kershaw's sliders and Yu Darvish's sliders in that 2017 World Series and how often the Astros took those pitches. Because Kershaw's slider, you do not see the spin, especially that year.
So I'm fascinated because I've watched Clayton Kershaw pitch against the Giants roughly 732 times in his career. At least it feels like that. He is as dominant against the Giants as any pitcher has ever been against another team, especially over, I think, 200 innings. Once you get to that level, it's like Kershaw's up here, and then I can't remember who's second, but, you know, Tom Seaver against the so-and-so is down there. What's it like to face him? Like, is it just, can you have a plan? Like, can you sit there and go, okay, I'm going to sit fastball in, or I'm going to look away, or I'm just going to look for the bendy stuff? Like, how do you even approach that?
You know, he dominated me for so long, like, ridiculously. And until my last 2 years, I started having some success on him. He has this little hitch thing in his pitch. So not only does he have, like, elite stuff, he has this weird timing that, like, where he's, like, coming, watch him, and he, like, sinks again and then throws. So he's, like, it's, like, this normal thing, sink, throw. And it just, like, makes timing it just a little. So, like, you see the stuff pretty good, and you think you're going to crush it, and you just foul it off. Like, you just miss your pitch. And the thing with this slider is you have to 100% sell out cheap, because it looks exactly like the fastball. And it's going to break late and very sharp. So the only way I started hitting him was, like, not swinging for the ball, like, just completely guessing that it was that slider and taking a path that was going to hit the slider. And if it was a fastball, I just swung through it and acted like, oh, man, I missed it. And then hoped that he threw the slider again. It was just because I faced him so much. I knew to completely cheat for the one pitch and hope that he loved that pitch. And that was the only way to hit it, is because I already knew the movement before. Like, I just acted like it was going to move before it moved. And that's where I started having some success. Everything is very tough to time. It's very elite. It all is very crisp. He can locate all of his pitches at any time. And they're just way different than each other.
Something I've always wondered. Brandon Belt was a high school left-handed pitcher in Texas while Clayton Kershaw was making his way. Does he talk about how he could have been better than Kershaw? Because that seems like something he might do.
You don't ever take Belt seriously. He's like never, like, he's so nonchalant. But, like, imagine, like, Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. He's kind of like, you know, like this, like, slow paced rhythm of, and he's like, I was better than Kershaw. And you're like, yeah, whatever, Belt. You know, like, I mean, he's not, like, depressed or anything, but he's just kind of like, that's, like, the way he talks and moves. And he's like Eeyore, but, like way too much confidence, like this overly arrogant Eeyore. Because, like, he moves and talks in the pace of Eeyore, but with the confidence of, like, Ric Flair.
That's amazing. That's a combination, Eeyore and Ric Flair.
If you combine Eeyore with Ric Flair, you have Brandon Belt. And, of course, he tells you, I was a way better pitcher than Kershaw, and I hit more homers than Babe Ruth. And, like, everything that in Belt's world is he's the best at it.
Well, yeah, hey, it's gotten him to some great places. So, you know, whatever works.
I love that. You love that about him. He's a very charming person to be around.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. You don't get that many opportunities to upgrade your organization through a terrific hire. LinkedIn Jobs helps you to nail those chances. We've all searched for a job at some point in our lives, and chances are, if you're like me, you've used LinkedIn as a resource to network and follow the trends in your industry. You've spent a lot of time on LinkedIn, so why wouldn't you make that the place to post your job? LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to a perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make that process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/MLB show. That's linkedin.com/MLB show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
I don't want to kill the vibe, but I feel like we have to talk about Fernando Tatis just a little bit. I was watching the game. I had to explain to my kids while we're watching it, like, yes, that's the opponent. At the same time, baseball's about a billion times better when that guy is healthy and rolling. I know the Padres have depth, but have you ever experienced a gut punch like that this early in the season?
When I was with the Phillies in 2012, Utley and Howard were out for the whole first half. And when Bumgarner broke his hand or whatever, that right after 2015, maybe 2016, that was pretty tough as well. It is tough. It's really tough to overcome, you know. And, you know, Buster not playing last year was tough, you know, but we understood, obviously. It's sad for sure. What are you going to do? You know, we just got to keep this kid healthy because when he's on the field, it's special.
The burgeoning, you know, I wrote about it in the Athletic MLB power rankings. It's like King Kong versus Godzilla is happening in the NL West. And when you've got, you know, one of the key players in that burgeoning rivalry, you've got Tatis getting hurt on a freak play like that. It just, I was upset as a fan of baseball. It's the Padres are technically a divisional rival of the Giants. At the same time, the game is just so much better when he's playing. There's like a group of core guys that I'll watch do anything. I'll watch take infield practice, and he's one of them. Ozzie Albies, I think, is one of my favorite.
Really?
Like, yeah, anything he does, I just want to watch. He just seems like he's having that Pablo Sandoval, like that fun vibe. Like, I'm here, and I'm here to have fun. I'm a baseball player. Mauricio Dubon, like, hey, this is great. Like, I'm here. Like, this is the best job in the world.
Interesting, because Ozzie Albies to me is like the gritty gamer. Like, I'm here to freaking spit tobacco, even though I don't know if he does tobacco. And I'm here to win the game and get dirty and slide and hustle and like get after you. Like, you know, Tatis is the smiling Francisco Lindor vibe. And then I got like kind of the Jose Ramirez from the Indians, dude, the meanest mug, like mean mug. I'm here to hit this ball out. I'm here to win, you know, and he just kind of walks all. But I like that. Like, I love that swagger. You know, like to me, like Tatis Jr. and like Otani are like the Lamborghinis. Like, they're freaking, yes. when they're going, they're pumping or whatever. But like, well, let's keep them oiled and stuff. So definitely sad. But on a different note, two players that were in the winter ball leagues with me when I was there in the winter ball in the Dominican Republic. And it was just this absolutely amazing, amazing experience in my life. But another one. So Fernando Tatis Jr. was on Escogido doing his thing, and I was just like, holy cow, this kid is so good. But one of the other players that I really enjoyed and loved his personality and loved his heart and his hustle started his major league career this season 8-for-8, and he's still pumping. Yermin Mercedes. This dude is just a big catcher. They have him DH-ing, just hitting everything, lasers everywhere. Have you seen this guy?
I have not. He was not on my radar at all. You know, he's 28 years old. You know, not a top prospect. You know, Baseball America doesn't put him on the cover of their magazine or anything like that. So he definitely snuck under my radar. The last time we saw him was in 2019. He was just raking in AAA. And 2020...
330, 20-some homers. That's pretty legit.
Bananas. And then last year, he gets one plate appearance for the entire 2020 season. So he was not on my radar, but you knew him and you were sort of looking out for him?
Like, he came out in the winter ball and he had like one of the sickest intros, hitting for, you know, the Licey is like the most, like the Yankees of Dominican Republic, you know? And so like, it's a big deal. And they went nuts for him. I'm like, who is this guy? Like, and he had this awesome intro and he's just this big guy and he had all this swag. And I just like, and he was super fun to talk to, you know, he was cool at home plate. And so obviously you like, because you play a lot of these teams a lot and you really like fall in love with like, yeah, you're competing and it's a rivalry and you're heated, but you, when you come back to the States, you super root for everyone that was in that league because you're all grinding together, you know, you have this different connection. And so when I saw him and what he was doing, I was just like, hell yeah, that's my boy. And that's just kind of how you feel. And like, right now he's got .632 average, one home run, six RBIs, and a .1597 OPS. So this is one guy we're going to have to check out, because hitting .330 with like 20-some homers as a catcher in AAA, it's tough to do. That's not nothing. And because these guys are pumping, you know, they're pumping some heat down there as well. The balls aren't as juiced as they are in the big league. So he's one that I'm really excited for. There's one other one. We have to hit this story before we go. Tigers. This guy, Bamboo, I think that's how you say it. Let me say his name right. You know who I'm talking about?
Akil Badu?
Badu. I'm bad with names. I got to make sure now that I'm like officially talking baseball, I don't call him the wrong name. But Badu, with his first at bat, oppo homer, hits a grand slam. This dude, his swing is nice, and he is a powerhouse. He was picked up in a Rule 5 draft while suffering Tommy John surgery. That's how good he is. Where did he come from? How old is he? I need more.
At 22, a second round pick from the Twins. So he topped out in high A. He, in 2019, the last we saw him, he was hitting in high A for the Twins and not doing much. He was hitting .214. He had iffy strikeout to walk ratio. So there's a reason why it's like, oh, well, you know, he's not a prospect. Rule 5, they were able to keep him because he was hurt. We'll see you in 2024. But he made the team by raking this spring. He hit .325. He almost walked as often as he struck out. He was hitting for power. He's stealing bases. So the Tigers are like, okay, you know, we'll give him a shot. And I don't know, you know, it's just a few games, like we keep saying, but it's hard not to be impressed so far.
Looking at his swing and his stance and his timing and his strength, I'm like, all right, that's a well-balanced swing that's going to do damage. Like, where do you throw a strike to that guy? Like, look at his path. Look how quick it is. Look how tight it is. Like, that pitch was not like down the middle that he took the other way. That was like painted. And he, for his first home run, I didn't see the other one, but I know that he's like .429 at the moment, you know, hit a grand slam. Obviously it was in kind of like garbage time because, you know, they were like down 15-2 or something, but still excited to see that guy. Some of these young Tigers, you know, and Yermin Mercedes, very excited for him. So like, there's a lot that happened in the first week, that a lot of storylines, a lot of teams I'm following. I'm still following my White Sox and the Braves. I want to see how they come, how they bounce back. Now I'm really intrigued with the Phillies and the Giants. You know, minus like one, you know, opening day like jitters, some walks, their lineup is looking stacked.
It's interesting. And the Giants actually, at Badu, is, you can segue into a Giants conversation because it's sort of like the new baseball. And what I mean by that is, when I was starting as a writer, baseball was, you know, you looked at the stats, you looked to see what a player did in the previous year. Here's what he did at this level. You can predict what he'll do at the next level, and then he'll come up at this level. Like, you could sort of see this linear progression. Baseball's not like that. Baseball is about a team of people figuring out how to make this athlete better. And sometimes it just clicks in with guys on the Giants, like Yastrzemski and Solano. You're not looking at their minor league stats and saying, well, you know, when Solano's 31, he's going to be Rod Carew. Like, there's no reason to think that. And then all of a sudden, these teams are getting so freaking good at unlocking this latent potential in a guy like Solano, in a guy like Yastrzemski. So when you're seeing someone like Mercedes or Badu, you're not thinking, well, he's going to come back to earth. You're thinking, did they unlock something? Did they tweak? Did they figure it out?
I mean, of those two, like, Badu is the one that you're like, maybe we got a new star here. And I mean, Mercedes, maybe, you know, maybe he's just hot. Time will tell. you know, that's exciting. But like you said, the Solano, the Yastrzemski, the deep lineup. I thought even, you know, Discalfani, I hope I say that correctly, looked really good working with Buster, you know, back there. That was nice stuff. Like, I don't think that the NL West is just the Padres and the Dodgers yet. I mean, the Dodgers are great, and the Padres are good too, but I think the Giants, they're going to be tough, man. They played the Dodgers well last year. They actually had more trouble with the Padres, I felt like, than the Dodgers. What was the Giants with the Dodgers and the Giants with the Padres?
I agree with you where the Giants had a tougher time against the Padres. It's hard to know if that was, you know, that final series where they needed just one game to make the postseason, it sort of weighs on you. And I'm wondering if that is the case. I'm going to look it up right now.
The whole season they had trouble with the Padres. Like, and honestly, it was the bullpen that was just carving them. And they got a new bullpen. So that's one of the things that's a little scary with the Padres is, like, I want to buy into your bullpen. I know you got the lineup, and I know you got some starting pitchers, but is your bullpen – because, like, they had some young guys pumping 102 that you didn't know their name, and you were like – buckle up. It's going to be a tough 7, 8, 9.
Right. Seems like everyone they throw out there is throwing hard with a weird changeup. Last night, though, they cut to the bullpen and warming up were Drew Pomeranz and Mark Melancon. And that made me laugh. It's like, hey, I know those guys. Like, so they've got a deep bullpen. Last year, the Giants were 2-8 against the Padres. They were 4-6 against the Dodgers, but 2-8 against the Padres.
Yeah, and that's what's got it. Like, if they can play well against the Padres, like, that's the thing they need to unlock. You know, let's just stay the course. I'm excited to see because I know all the analytics, all the work they're putting in with these pitchers. I know they're going to make adjustments over 162, working with this great hitting staff. I think they're like, don't sleep on them. You know, it's not just the Padres and the Dodgers. But like you said, Fernando Tatis comes back. It's a different animal.
All right. This has been episode 2 of The Baseball Barista with Hunter Pence and myself and Grant Prisby. Thank you for listening. You can catch the Athletic MLB show all week. We will be back next Thursday, and we'll have another week of baseball to talk about and nerd out over. Like, I'm looking forward to figuring out who's actually hot, who's, you know, who's just floating around. I don't know. I'm curious.
You know what we have to do, though? Like, I feel like we have to make, you know, a weekly prediction.
You just want to make me look bad. You want to get me on the line and
I'm willing to look bad. We both make a weekly prediction. Like, it's just part of the fun. Like, I like to follow it as well. And then we can come back and talk about it. So what's your weekly prediction? Who's going to come out of a rut? Who's going to stay hot? Last week you said that the Tigers were going to sweep the Indians. Almost did, right? That was your bold prediction.
There's always like one funky team that it just, especially in the opening series, there's going to be one where you look at it and you're like, oh, you know, Orioles, Yankees. Well, that's no contest. And then it's baseball. And that's why I'm saying, you're going to make me look bad as a joke, because there's no better way to look bad than to predict baseball. And it sounds like a cliche, but for like, you know, 20
sounds
years
like
I've
excuses.
Been trying to predict baseball and it just doesn't work.
That's the fun of it. It's okay to look bad. No excuses. Let's have some fun. Let's make fun of ourselves. It's part of the joy.
I've talked a lot of positive things about the Dodgers. I've said they were my World Series prediction last week. I'm hyping up, you know, their World Series win in this episode. So I'm going to atone for that. And I'm going to say the Nationals are going to go into Los Angeles and they're going to at least win the series. They're hungry to play. They're tired of sitting around in COVID protocols. I think they're going to take it out on the Dodgers a little bit.
They're playing the Braves right now. Do they play the Dodgers after that? Is that what it is?
They play the Dodgers. Yeah, they play the Dodgers starting April 9th. I mean, you know, hopefully they're playing the Dodgers. Hopefully they're playing at all.
I didn't think this through because I don't have a bold prediction, but as I'm looking at it, my prediction for next week is it's a tough one, man. There's so many good games out there. Phillies, 6 more wins by the next time we talk. That's my bold prediction. Let's go, Phils. And they're playing the Mets. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, they're going to be banging each other's heads. Another fierce, fierce interdivision rivalry. All right, this has been The Baseball Barista with Hunter Pence and Grant Brisby. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week. We'll have more games to talk about, and we'll see you then.
I love coffee!